Technology.ie, it's Monday, January 26th, 2015, and you know by the sounds of it, I'm in Michaela Nealon's office. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Colin.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Welcome to the show. This is Conor Muinichon, and I'm with Michaela Nealon. He's the CEO of Black Knight, and we're in his office at Black Knight HQ in Carlow. Michaela, you're just back from the USA.
I am. I was over there for the first couple of weeks of January.
Right. Las Vegas, you said, nice place, but you wouldn't like to live there.
I don't know whether I'd want to live there or not. It's... if you're around the Vegas Strip after about a week or so, it's really kind of enough. It's quite tiring.
Yeah. Now, you were there for CES, I'm going to ask you about. You were also there the week after CES. There was a conference called NamesCon, which I'll ask you about. Which do you want to talk about first?
I don't mind. Let's do CES. Let's be logical here. God damn it.
CES. Apparently, it doesn't stand for anything anymore. It used to be the Consumer Electronics Show, and now they just call it International CES, and that's the name of it, apparently. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
There you go.
It's run by the Consumer Electronics Association, which is a very big American association for people involved in everything to do with consumer electronics, and they're quite active as well in dealing with technology policy on the Hill in Washington and things like that. So part of the reason that I was there was, as I'm on the board of the ITC, the Internet Infrastructure Coalition, we spoke to Christian Dawson in the past. So there were a few tracks during the first couple of days of CES dealing with tech policy, which was quite fascinating, because you had like the chairwoman of the FTC and people like that there. You had some of the policy people from Lyft and Uber, and that was fascinating because you're dealing with two companies that are operating in the same space but with two totally different philosophies. Whereas, you know, Uber works on the basis of it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission, whereas Lyft works on the basis let's ask for permission.
Yeah.
So that was quite interesting. But I mean, both companies, of course, you know, dealing with how do you as a technical company that's innovating in a space and possibly disrupting established industries, you know, how can you do that within the parameters of existing law, existing legislation? And, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, the different approaches. Like Lyft would, you know, engage with lawmakers, whereas Uber, in many cases, would use its customer base to put pressure on politicians. Quite interesting. But with the exhibition itself is gigantic.
Yeah.
The number of attendees, I threw up a blog post, I think it was something like 170,000 attendees during the week, spread over two primary locations, and then there's a couple of other locations which would be a bit smaller. Las Vegas Convention Center is gigantic and was absolutely packed. I mean, it was like wall to wall with people. I've never been in an event that big. I mean, it's mind-bogglingly big.
The last thing that we were at it was Web Summit. How would you compare it to Web Summit?
Oh, Web Summit's tiny.
Yeah,
Web Summit's like a little corner over to one side. I mean, Web Summit's tiny by comparison.
In terms of gadgets, in terms of technology, anything that really stuck with you from that?
A lot of people have been asking me that. And, you know, I think some people can expect me to turn around and go, oh, you know, this gadget was the thing. And to be perfectly honest, there were a few things that really caught my attention. They caught my attention because they solved a problem rather than they reinvented the wheel.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So let's say you look at the stands that were there. You had really big stands from companies like Panasonic, Sony. A lot of the car makers had huge stands. There were a lot of these really impressive displays. I mean, the stands alone probably cost millions to put together. And some of them were showing off some really cool technology. Like the Panasonic were doing this thing around the kind of end-to-end passenger technology experience, which was awesome. I mean, for somebody like me who travels a lot, it was like, oh my god, when can I get some of this stuff? But what was more impressive to me was things like a little gadget that is the same form factor as a 9-volt battery, and you would use it to replace the battery in your smoke alarm. And in so doing, it's not just a battery. It's a battery, but it's got a little bit of intelligence built in, so you can then hook up the smoke alarm onto your Wi-Fi network. You can get status about the battery life. You can also do things like turning the thing on and off, or putting it on sleep mode or whatever it is. You know, so if you set it off because you burnt the toast in the morning, you can handle that from your mobile phone instead of doing what a lot of us do, which is simply unplug the damn thing. And you know what's cool about that is that it's accessible price wise. The Nest Protect is a fantastic device, wonderful. But here in Ireland, I think you're looking at €220 a pop or something. Whereas this little device, you're looking at $20 or $30 or something.
And it's compatible with your existing infrastructure as well.
Oh yeah, all you're doing is just replacing the battery.
Cool.
And you're getting that intelligence. One of the things that I really, really liked was this thing from Damson Audio, which is called the what are they calling it? It's a really, really cool concept. It's the idea. It's a headphones that they're calling head bones.
Yeah.
Right. And what they do is instead of going into your ear, they actually go on your temple.
Hmm.
So what that means is that unlike his traditional headphones where you have something in your ear, which means you can't hear ambient noise. And I'm just thinking about thinking of practical considerations. Let's say if you're a cyclist, for example. If you're cycling, it would be great to be able to listen to your music, but you also need to be able to hear traffic. So what do you do? I mean, do you turn down the volume? I mean, what do you do? How do you...
You don't want to be blocking your ears.
You want to be able to hear, you know, whatever's going on around you as well. This actually solves it because, as they say, head bones hear everything.
Excellent.
So
it conducts the sound through your skull.
Through your skull. So it turns the inside...
I wonder. Are they
waterproof? No, they're not waterproof.
Yeah, because I think I've heard of similar devices that you could use for swimming.
Possibly. But I mean, it's, you know, the thing with these is... It's an innovative. It's an innovative way of taking that technology further along. I mean, you know, you're again. What I like about it, it solves a problem. Yeah. I can see a practical application. Like I was looking at other stuff there, and you know, I was left scratching my head. Like there was a French company, and there were a lot of French companies there. It was like it's called the La French Tech, which is kind of cool. I mean, it is cool. Like they have all the little logos and everything. And one of them, the thing was, it was really interesting audio technology to give you like this 3D experience, but relied on you using proprietary software to play TV shows or movies. So I'm just kind of going, well, hold on a second. This is a bit pointless. Yeah. So let's say, for example, I rent a high definition movie on iTunes. I can't get the audio experience unless I somehow clone the video and then run it through their proprietary app. I'm just kind of going, what?
It's funny, you know, hardware manufacturers keep making that mistake. But the thing that stood out for me, and as I say, it's difficult when you're trying to, I suppose, see things through the filter of the internet when you're actually not at the event, you know. But one thing that jumped right out, and the one thing we covered on technology.ie, was the USB Type-C connector,
which is
recently been approved. But it was for CES was an opportunity for some people to actually get their hands on one. I posted a video there a couple of weeks ago.
No, I didn't actually see it myself.
Yeah. No, but it's, I mean, you plug it in and it works either way.
Well, this sometimes. Is it. I mean, it's fantastic. But I mean, the thing about CES though is, I mean, it's fascinating. If you're actually trying to navigate this massive space.
Mm.
What they have is, like, they have, you know, themes, as it were. So, let's say, wearables, fitness, health, auto-related, etc., are done by themes. But then you've got big, really big companies like the Samsungs and the Sonys who have lines covering pretty much everything. So, you know, you end up in one of those, and you might kind of go, well, wait a second, this is wearable stuff. Why is this here? And it's because Samsung has this huge stand, so, of course, it's all going to be on there. I mean, other cool stuff, you know, 3D TV without the glasses. Several companies were demoing that tech, and it was pretty damn good.
Excellent.
So it's like, it's the full 3D effect that you'd get, but it's all done within the screen.
Mm.
I mean, it's the kind of thing, if you've ever been to Disneyland in Paris, there's a couple of 3D effect things there, and one or two of them require that you wear the 3D glasses, but a couple of the other ones don't. And this is the kind of way that some of this technology is going, so making it easier for you to access. Wearables, God, so many wearables, and not just for humans. There was a huge number of wearables for pets.
Wow.
Other wearables that, I mean, okay, they're for humans, but for small humans.
Yes.
But, I mean, some of them you'd be kind of looking at, thinking to yourself, okay, I can understand why there might be a need for this, but, oh my God, you might be a really bad parent if you actually need this. You know, things like, you know, how to track your child just in case you leave the child unattended in the car. It's like, you know, why would you do that? Okay, I'm not a parent, so maybe I don't understand how strongly the desire is to leave your children behind. But, you know, you still have to look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, things like on the wearable side and that entire kind of quantified self, loads of sleep monitors. I mean, loads of them. I must have seen, if I saw two, I saw 20. Problem with a lot of them is that they're trying to get around the wearable aspect of it by putting it into the bed somehow. But most of them seem to rely on putting some kind of strip across the bed, which would be fine if everybody had small single beds. And none of them seem to have come up with something that would actually cover a double bed. I mean, I had a rather psychedelic conversation with somebody trying to explain to them, look, I've got a large bed. Oh, well, you know, one side's for his, one side's for hers. And I'm going, what happens if I change sides? Oh, we don't know what to do with that. I'm going, okay.
In fairness, Michele, it has to be said, you know, you go to CES, you see fantastic things in a fantastic place in Las Vegas, and you never see them again because they never make it to market. It's a great place for vaporware and things
of
like
course.
That.
Of course. I mean, this is the thing. Yeah. I mean, some of the ones, I mean, like, you're wandering around. I mean, like, I've backed several things on Kickstarter. I've backed several things on Kickstarter over the last couple of years. And, you know, you wander around CES and you go, oh, wait a second, weren't you guys on Kickstarter? And they go, yeah, that's where we started. And there's a bunch of them. And some of them are still small. It's like a small little stand, a little table, like two staff. Others, they've obviously done well. I mean, they've grown quite dramatically. And it's, you know, there's a couple of devices I came across, and I was like, oh, you know, that looks very, like, thing. They go, oh, you know, it's on Kickstarter. And I fired up my Kickstarter account. And I was like, oh, right, I backed you. They're like, oh, cool, you're one of our backers. They're like, yay. But, I mean, you know, as I say, other ones, you look at it, you just go, wow.
Hmm.
You know, I honestly don't know how that's going to play out long term, if it's going to play out at all. It probably won't.
Hmm.
Because you're right. I mean, some of these ones are going to be total and utter vaporware.
So a week anyway in Las Vegas is enough for anybody, Michele, but you stayed for a second week for NamesCon.
I did.
Now, we spoke to Jonathan Frakes before Christmas, and he's the organiser of NamesCon. It was the second annual one. Tell me about that. In particular, you were saying there was a domains auction while you were there.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing with NamesCon is it started off, I mean, when we spoke to Jonathan several weeks back, it had already got to the point where they knew that it was going to be a big event.
Yeah.
By the time everybody got to Vegas and we were having like a meeting with Jonathan and on the other speakers and moderators and everything else, Jonathan was able to say to us, you know, this is actually going to be the biggest domain industry event outside of an ICANN meeting ever. Like, I think they topped 900 registrations. Wow. Or something, which is, you know, significant. And part of the reason for that was because, you know, in terms of ticket pricing, it wasn't horrendously expensive. Vegas is a relatively cheap destination if you're getting there from within the US, even from outside the US, it's not particularly expensive to get there. You know, you can get a hotel room in a clean hotel that won't be abhorrent for, you know, quite a reasonable rate, probably less than what you'd pay in the centre of Dublin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a good location for that. And it was interesting as well. It was, you know, interesting cross section of content and speakers. I mean, you had people coming at it from the pure domain investor perspective, you know, how to monetize your domain, how to park your domain, how to develop your domain. But then you had people like Jay Scott, who's the chair of INTA, the International Trademark Association, who addressed the crowd. I mean, that's something that had never happened. Mm. Then you had this guy who's gone off and developed a bunch of websites using new TLDs, who gave a really, really amazing presentation, which was full of energy. It was fantastic. Mm. But what was really interesting was the domain auction. Because, I mean, there's domain auctions held all the time. Sometimes they're live with actual, you know, human beings in a room. But more often than not, they're held online. And, you know, there's been domain auctions at these kind of events for as long as I've been going to them. And, you know, there's been a bit of a buzz in the past. But if you look at what had happened at a lot of those auctions over the years, you'd end up with a kind of crazy situation where, you know, you'd have people putting up for auction domain names that were unlikely to sell because the reserves on them were just so high. So, you know, a domain with a reserve of $1.5, $2, $3, $4 million, it's unlikely it's going to sell in a public auction there and then. So, you know, you're coming to, you know, lot number, blah, you know, super duper domain dot whatever, let's start the bidding at $3 million. And, you know, you're sitting there in the room and just crickets. I mean, nobody's going to bid.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to. I mean, for that kind of acquisition, you're talking about, it's going to be something involving somebody who really, really wants the domain name and a big kind of long, protracted negotiation around it. What happened in Vegas, stays in Vegas, no, seriously, what happened in Vegas with that was that they got several of the new TLD registries to put names up for auction. So you had names up from .club, .xyz, .vegas, I think, put a few names in, and the guys from Radix put in ones from .host and .press. So there was some really nice domain names, and a lot of the domains didn't have crazy reserves. So sitting in that room, I missed the first few minutes of the auction. I was at a meeting or something, and I went in, and that room, and it was quite a big room, was packed to the gills. Standing room only, and there was a lot of bidding action. I mean, like, lots were coming out, and there were people bidding, and there were names going from, you know, on the low end, a couple of $100s through to, you know, a good healthy 5-6 figure sum. And that was, you know, that was fantastic because it was real energy. I was sitting there beside one of the old geezers, you know, one of these guys who'd invested in domain names back in the early 90s. And, you know, the grin on his face was something else. He was really genuinely excited. And, you know, there was energy there. It was great.
Would you say, would you put it down to the coming on stream of the new TLDs? Because what it means really is that you now have this great choice, this great selection. You no longer have people fighting for a few premium names in limited name spaces like .com and .net. There's some really exciting possibilities, as you say, in .club, .host, .press. There's enough to go around, if you like.
Well, there was always enough to go around at one level.
Yeah.
But, you know, no, I kind of would disagree with how you're characterising that.
Sure.
Because that suggests that new TLDs are going to be as attractive for domain investors and people who are likely to pay money, much higher prices for domain names than the quote-unquote legacy TLDs. And I don't think we're there yet. And I'm not sure whether we ever will be there, but we're not there yet. I think there's a lot of interesting possibilities around new TLDs. But if you look at the sales prices for, say, you know, keyword.tld in .com versus keyword.tld in a new TLD, there's a massive gap. Like, you can get a much nicer, subjectively speaking, domain name in a new TLD than you could in a legacy.com or whatever. I think what was good was that the auction organizers, which is Right of the Dot, I think they were quite careful about how they selected the itinerary, so there was more buzz around that.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I think there's going to be some interesting possibilities around it.
You said it yourself, you know, it's those really premium ones in the legacy domains, right? They're you're talking about millions of dollars for those.
Oh, yeah.
They're the private treaty negotiations, kind of thing. Whereas, what kind of prices were we talking about for some of these new TLD premium?
I mean, it varied. Names. I mean, some of them were fairly low, to be honest with you. I mean, we're talking like I was, you know, the thing I've found over the years is that you know, a lot of the time you're there and you expect a domain name to go for some crazy amount of money.
Mm.
So, I mean, looking at some of the names that went, Madrid.xyz, $250.
Yeah.
CrossFit.wiki, $400. Shuttles.vegas, $500. I mean, those are very affordable domain names. Now, moving up into the four figure, Celebrity.wiki, $1,800.
Interesting, yeah.
I mean, again, that's not crazy money.
No.
That's really not crazy money. Now, of course, the problem is this, is it's really a case of, you know, what do people do with the domain afterwards? You know, if you're looking at it in terms of, I'm going to spend, you know, $1,000, $5,000 or euro on the super duper all singing, all dancing domain name, and then I'm going to build an entire business around that, that's a very different proposition to, I'm going to spend this money and then I'm going to resell the domain name. And then, you know, it's not being used. I mean, some of the ones went at, you know, quite interesting prices. Like wine.club went for 140,000.
Interesting.
Now, that's actually not crazy money if you think about it. Like coffee.club was sold as part of a special deal that the guys in .club did. And you may or may not have seen a couple of the photos I posted of the coffee.club coffee that I got in Vegas. It's actually not bad. And they're doing like a members club thing where you get a subscription service for coffee, unfortunately only in the US. But I mean, that's an awesome domain name for that. But I mean, looking at some of the prices, I mean, they did 87 out of 134 lots sold. That's pretty damn good. Like, I've sat in some of those auctions and they just have not, you know, a lot of the domains simply have not reached their reserve.
Sounds like a busy day at Ennismart, really, you know, similar kind of a
vibe. I haven't been to the Ennismart now in a few years. Last time I was at Ennismart, it was still beside the train station.
And that's still where it is to this day, Michele. It's great, Michele, and good to hear from you and your reports on those two events. So thanks for talking to us.
No problem.